And welcome back to the Coast to Coast to Coast podcast. I am Chadley. I am your host, and I am joined with two more coasters. Out east, we have Dale, the broker, and up north on Lake Erie, we've got Chip, the delivery man. How you guys doing?
Doing well. Just another boring day in the NFL.
Also doing well, Chad. I feeling pretty good after just watching the Cleveland Cavaliers close out the Indiana Pacers here.
Yeah, that was an exciting one, and that was a much-needed win for this team.
Yeah, Darius Garland with 41 points tonight.
Whew. Wow, this kid is just – man, the fact that this kid is so good right now, and everybody that's big in NFL media is convinced that Mobley is actually going to be the better player is so encouraging.
Yeah, and he hit in the final 30 seconds two clutch free throws that I thought were like crucial to close it out. So, yeah, he's a clutch player too. I mean, it's just – and it's so exciting to know how young this team is, and this is just the beginning.
Yeah, it looks like they're on a good track. And what's even more encouraging, because you never know what's coming year to year, is they look like they're being built well, which makes me feel good about – who's coaching and putting this team together. And to me, that's more important, because you just don't know, you know, how things are going to turn out as you go, but you feel pretty good when you have a well-built organization, which, I mean, let's face it, this organization has been built on LeBron for so long that it feels good to know that without him, even though obviously he'll be back next year, they have something to stand on. They have a leg to stand on, really.
Right.
Yeah, we got some cap stories coming up later, including Jared Allen and what we think of that injury, a little bit more on Mobley Garland and where the team stands right now. We've got some combine recap just a little bit, because we're doing a lot of draft stuff on the next podcast, and then a little review of defensive linemen, linebackers, and defensive ends. That shouldn't take very long, because we barely have any on the roster. Franchise tags were handed out in the NFL today, and there are some pretty notable names handed a franchise tag or a contract, probably in order to avoid a franchise tag, and then some free agency targets at our top positional needs. Are you guys drinking anything today, or are we going into this one sober?
No, I definitely have some beer here. I actually am getting a little bit in the Irish spirit early. I got the Irish Conway's Ale from Great Lakes. And
I haven't had that one in a while. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a seasonal, but I really, really like it. It's smooth. It's light on the IBUs. You know, I don't like them real strong like that bitter IPA's taste. So it goes down good for me.
And I'm going with a Clyde Mays Old Fashioned tonight. So nice. Not always available everywhere, but definitely when I if I'm mixing it up, really enjoy the Clyde Mays.
What is that?
It's a bourbon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they have a couple different they have a rye, they have it at one they label an American whiskey. But just their normal bourbon is my favorite of the bunch.
Ooh, that sounds pretty good. I'm doing a Orange Avenue, which is a orange honey shandy from Coronado Brewing Company that a buddy of mine brought over in the weekend and left a couple here. And it is delicious. It's definitely tastes like a summer beer. So I probably should have left it in the fridge for a warm day, but it just was sitting on top and it looked too good to pass up. So we're going with two of those today, probably. And pretty excited about it. I kind of miss when we did beer themes, and now hearing that Chip is drinking an Irish ale this close to St. Patrick's Day makes me feel like we should have done one again. So that's fun, but
we got some time.
Yeah, maybe the next podcast. But all right, let's move on to a couple things. So we got combine stories. Is there anything specific you guys wanted to jump into with the combine just getting finished up this week? It was a lot of coverage, and it was a little bit weird this year, and I don't know why until I realized maybe it was because we didn't do this last year.
And the one thing I wanted to touch on actually very much relates to that. So if anyone has been following along, they probably noticed the discrepancies in speed scores that were happening with the 40 times. Yeah. And an interesting fact that I had heard Dane Brugler with The Athletic mention, he started asking around because all the teams and the officials and unofficials, like the scores were just all over the place. And the one thing that he mentioned was that in reaching out and talking with the Colts, that they replaced their turf in 2020, but it was late 2020 after that combine, and we didn't have one last year. So it actually looks like there could be some performance enhancing turf that they had put down there, which is why some of those some of the 40 times that people were seeing were just they were record setting the unofficial times, and then as whole groups, they were across the board, everyone was just faster.
Yeah,
it was, yeah, so what I was really gonna say is I didn't see as many records in terms of like, I
mean, yeah, not the sheer like year. Right. Chris Jones. Yeah.
So then but how does that make group, you feel
every receiver looked
how does
like
that make you feel about a guy that ran like a 4.5 then? Do you feel like he is even slower than that?
You probably gotta be a little skeptical, yeah. I would think. Now yeah, that doesn't mean slow, but
I think the numbers what they were calling out or some they it, I don't want to be way off here, but I think it was like 0.08. Like we're not talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I heard about a half, Dale. So similar.
Yeah. It there were some things like that, which is always interesting because like you have the scouts that are there and they hand time everyone. So they're sitting there with stopwatches and they hand time all of the guys. And from what I've been reading, that's what teams use. And they use it as a way to equalize between them going out to all these pro days and the combine and everything else, that they're just going to use their own hand times. They don't care.
Oh, I've never
official, unofficial, ESPN, NFL, like the.
Are they just basically thinking if our lead scout is the person taking this time and he's doing it at every single place, he's going to be a little more accurate than official times at all the different places?
So it's not the accuracy, it's the consistency. Okay. That's the key thing. Like they can adjust for whatever as long as all of the times are consistent based on we're using the same people, we're using the same stopwatches, like we're good with our process. They might not be held to a set like threshold, like, oh, well, it's gotta be a 4 or 5, but as long as they're consistently timed, because they'll time the guys multiple times. They'll get them at the pro day. They might get them at the senior bowl. They might get them at the combine. Well, if they're the same ones doing it, from a data perspective, adding that consistency is huge.
Yeah. And I think, you know how teams are, they trust themselves more than anything. They trust their scouts. GMs want their own numbers and things. They don't want to look at other people's boards or times or
they're not going to go try to figure out someone else's board before they put theirs together. It's irrelevant. But yeah, it's when you're looking at numbers and you're looking at statistics, you need to be able to normalize. And if you're just throwing a bunch of numbers in from all these different types of measurements, your data is just not going to be very good.
All right, so back to your and Chip, I think I was hearing similar. I was hearing 0.05-ish was like, if you just look at normal receivers' times, it seemed like everybody on an average was about 0.05. So like a half of a half second, half of the tenth faster. And so if somebody runs a 4.5, some of these teams might be thinking they're more like a 4.55 guy. So I guess that probably doesn't, you know, take a huge dip on them. And it still means a lot of people measured really well, but it does make it seem as if this is the fastest class in history, and maybe
right.
that's probably not the case.
And I only bring that up because the one guy I noticed that made the biggest move, or actually fall, I should say, is Treylon Burks. It seemed like he was the consensus one, and then after the combine, he's suddenly now like
dipping down. I think it was that, and I've also heard he came in with weight and height measurements way different from what they were getting from different sources. So I think people got – I think it was kind of a disappointment factor. Like, we thought he was going to be this fast, this explosive. We thought he was going to be, you know, taller. We thought he was going to be, you know, quicker. And so I think all of that was like – the expectation for him was so high that I think when they saw he was kind of a human, it kind of took away some of the allure.
Yeah, he definitely fell back to earth a little bit after the combine.
Yeah, and who knows? You know, one team might say, we love what we saw in film. Good. I hope some teams dropped him a little bit, because I'm hoping that means he gets us. Because I think in the end, I think it really does come down to what the scouts saw, how the GM sees the prospect off film overall. And the combine, and this is just what I've heard from a lot of guys, from like listening to Bucky Brooks, Daniel Jeremiah, even Dane Brugler, the combine is a way to look at things like Treylon Burks and say, he was separating, he must be really fast. And then you look at the combine and you see what you see. And now you have to look back at the film and say, okay, was he really fast, or was he, let's look at the numbers for some of the cornerbacks he played against, or things like that, or the safeties, and let's see if they just weren't that fast. You know, were we tricked into thinking this guy looked really fast because he was outrunning people that just were slow? It's kind of a way to get you to grade your own work a bit.
And are you guys familiar with speed score at all?
Yeah, I've heard of that.
I have not.
So for those that haven't, so it basically adjusts your 40 time based on your, I think it's mainly weight. There might be a height consideration. So it's a weight adjusted measure. And his 40 time wasn't bad because he's a big guy.
Right.
But for Burks, his three cone was terrible. It was in the eighth percentile.
And I think that really disappointed people, because everybody's been saying Burks, that is the next Deebo Samuels. Yeah. And Deebo Samuels was unbelievably quick.
Yeah, the explosiveness was not there. His vertical was bad as well. So when people are trying to comp him to Deebo, A.J. Brown, which body style, he's closer to A.J. Brown.
Yeah.
But basically his tape, which I would think would be the most important thing, and I'm sure it will be to some teams and not everyone. So that's what I think is going to make his draft spot really interesting, is that he showed more explosiveness on tape than in the drills, which is interesting. Usually that kind of goes the other way.
Yeah. Again, sometimes what I've heard about people like that is pay attention to how powerful a guy is, because sometimes when you put on all the weight of the pads, a cornerback might be slowed down, and a really powerful receiver might not. So all of a sudden they are faster than on film than they are, you know, off film. Like, for instance, there's a guy that measured I believe the fastest running receiver in the draft, they said was about 170 pounds. Well, when he's in full pads, I guarantee that has a bigger effect on him than it does on Treylon Burks. So I think that's probably
helps good point.
To equate that.
Yeah, that's like, a good point.
He's really fast, but he's 5'8", 170 pounds. He's going to be,
man, that sounds great. I'd like to have those numbers.
Yeah, tell me about it. He's our height, and he is the fastest kid in the receiver class. So it was the big one. I'm glad you brought up Burks, Chip, because that was the one I think that flashed out to the most people of, uh-oh, what's going on here? Do you think this will realign any boards in the receiver department, or would it for you guys to see what these guys did in the combine, or would you think probably not a giant change in your opinions?
Well, you know, my guy was Drake London, and he didn't really perform due to a ankle injury that he was nursing. So a lot of this hasn't changed, but one thing that jumped out to me was actually Wilson outrunning Olave, but
yeah.
what, I heard that was interesting to me was going back to Dale's point on the turf and the problems they had with the 40 times is when these guys ran those 40 times and they saw their unofficial time, a lot of them chose not to run again because they thought, oh, I nailed that.
Right.
And then it got changed. So they were probably like, I would have ran again, you know, to improve my score.
Now they have to wait till their pro day, maybe.
Now they have to wait till their pro day.
Yeah, that's a bummer. Yeah, and I think I heard that the agents, because they did so many things in the same day because they were trying to get it all on TV, the agents had them not do a lot of other tests, which to me is a bummer because when I look at receivers, straight line 40 speed is kind of important for receivers, maybe safeties, maybe cornerbacks, not for many other positions, but so is that three-cone drill and things like that. And I think
those agility tests are so much more important.
Yeah, if you're going to have a slot receiver or you're going to have a receiver that's going to be running a full route tree, you want to make sure these guys can change direction quick. And that's a bummer you don't get that. But
plenty of great receivers in the NFL run mid 4.5s. Like, yeah, that
including,
it's
I
just
believe, Odell Beckham at one point and Jarvis Landry.
There's so many of them. And of the top speed guys, I think in the last couple of years, like two have made a name for themselves. Three are out of the league and five are finer in the middle from the way that some of the distribution has gone as far as like just careers. So it's one of those things that we always get super excited about. And yeah, I mean, you know, our group text, once we got the Olave and Wilson, those scores, everyone was losing their minds. so that happens, but it's not a death blow. And that's a good point, Chad, that you brought up about the drills. That was, so when the agents all started, I don't know if it was an actual suit or they just, no, it wasn't a suit. They just put out a notice like, hey, we're not going to do this. And the NFL caved on the COVID protocols. The one thing the NFL didn't cave on and they had included in there was the stacking of drills, and players had to pick and choose because there was too many things that it just, yeah, it didn't make sense for them
to
do.
It shouldn't
be a
made-for-TV event for that reason.
And it's really not. I mean, but
it is now.
The timing that they actually displayed and run it, like if they could do it bigger if they really wanted to. And I guess if, which I had just heard, I didn't realize that the draft is up for a new host city. So that'll be intriguing to see.
Everybody's mad about that, but it's going to happen.
From what they've been saying, Indy is still kind of in the running, but I'd be really surprised if it wasn't.
They said they want to do it. I've heard they want to do it like a Super Bowl. I heard they want to do it like the draft or a Super Bowl where it's rotation.
Of course.
Now. Yeah.
The NFL ruins everything.
Yeah. It's everybody wants it how it is, but they're going to change it anyway. So, well, outside of the receiver. So for me, I'll just say it didn't really change my board. I actually am higher on some guys than others. I'm really intrigued by Drake London, but a little bit nervous about his speed, which is interesting because we couldn't really see much of it. And his change of direction. I've always really, really liked Olave, and I continue to like Olave. Garrett Wilson, I think, from what I heard from everybody, it's hard not to want him one because everybody is pretty much now saying that's kind of the guy. I'm also with Chip. I'm a little nervous about Williams, and I'm glad he couldn't run because I think he's going to blow that run out of the water. And I think it is going to could lead somebody to be a little more excited about him than I would be. And then Treylon Burks, I have all sorts of questions about before this happened.
DK Metcalf did have a worse three cone, but there's really only one of him.
But I think you can see that he doesn't change directions very well. He's just fast down the field and he's
and we're all okay with that.
Yeah. If you got that kind of a size and speed, you just take it.
You just grab Drew Locke and you just go for it.
Yeah, that's coming up later. So besides the receivers, the defensive ends and the D linemen really showed up, and that was important for the Browns. Everybody is saying these are two of the deepest positions, although A lot of people are saying the edge and defensive line position is kind of top heavy, then fades off. Guys that just had phenomenal scores, Trayvon Walker, everyone was talking about, and he, you know, had an unbelievable 40-yard dash of 4.5 seconds at his weight is just, when Dale gets that speed score out, it's going to be unbelievable. He's 275 pounds or something like that. So that was just woof. And then
at some point we have to talk about Jordan Davis.
Yeah. Then Kayvon Thibodeau also was another guy who was just amazing 40-yard dash at less than 4.6 seconds. George Karloftis, who I really like at edge, and we'll get to more of these prospects next pod when we cover the draft. But he's another guy that had just an amazing vertical jump at the top of the list. He had an amazing shuttle, and for an edge rusher, you know, I'm less concerned about the 40, and I wanted to see some of these speed scores. Jermaine Johnson, David Ojabo, both of those guys had great speedy 40 times. It was it's probably a little misleading because of the turf. But you're looking at all these guys that even if you add that, you know, 0.05 second, you're looking at a bunch of really big, really fast, really athletic guys playing defense, which could be nice because that may be a direction the Browns decide to go in the first and if not the second round.
And the Thibodeau is interesting. The everything I've gathered, listening to people like Brugler and Jeremiah, I'm hearing the NFL is not as high on him as kind of the general public. I've been expecting from everything I've heard about him all off season, like he was a 1-2-3 guy, and some of the newest mocks kind of post draft have him down closer to 10.
Yeah. Which is funny. Cause I don't think he performed poorly there.
I
think it just, you know, one of those, which has happened before where people in early mocks have guys really high and later you hear scouts never had him that high. GMs never had him that high. The media kind of had him that high and it just stuck. So we'll see if that's one of those. I don't know. If he ends up floating somewhere around 13, I'm pretty interested given what he was able to accomplish in college, just given not only the film, but given just the sheer numbers for some of these guys, their production. I think it'll be interesting to see where some of these guys fall.
I think he was the number one recruit when he was coming out of high school, but also I keep hearing more and more that he's just was a one trick pony. His run defense wasn't there. He was more of like a finesse pass rusher. And
I don't know that they can put him out there every down.
Right.
I think that's part of it's got to be a fit thing, it seems like.
Yeah, it could be. But he's probably going to make somebody happy because somebody will figure out how to use him, I'm sure. But you guys might, he could be. We've seen these guys before go really high and then they just can't cut it because they don't have it up top or they don't have the versatility in their skill set. But in college, it looked great because the one thing they did well could beat all college guys.
Everybody.
It's just not going to beat the pros. So. Yeah, it really, when we get into the draft talk, I mean, there was a lot of draft talk or combine talk for a non-combine based podcast, but it really, those were big stories coming out. Otherwise, Chip, you were talking a little bit of quarterbacks and then we'll move past the combine for a while, but you had some risers, fallers in the quarterback area.
Oh, well, obviously Malik Willis running up the board and, be curious to see where he ends up and where he lands and how he, you know, makes his career. But, you know, my favorite, I've been speaking about him for a while now, and that's Ritter. And sorry, you kind of caught me off guard here. But, yeah, I'm kind of curious to see where he goes because he did really, really well in the combine. But also, I think what really makes me laugh about everybody kind of like, oh, but Ritter didn't do anything against Alabama. Well, Ritter's playing with Cincinnati offensive line against the top, the nation's best recruits. It's probably pretty hard to play with Cincinnati and I'm not downplaying them, but Alabama does get the best recruits in the country. So, yeah, I'm not going to take too much out of that game. He did
against
get them
11 guys who like 8 will end up in the NFL or something.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Right. Like, I agree. And let's
be realistic of what's.
It's what makes it so hard to judge. It's how we keep missing on quarterbacks in both directions, picking ones that bust and missing on guys that play pretty well until a little later on, especially in the first
Chip,
round.
I have seen Ritter mocked to the Lions at the end of the first.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's there's some teams down there that need one. So
yeah, I'm curious what people think of Kenny Pickett. The gloves thing turned out to be, you know, it's the biggest story since Teddy Two Gloves, and really he actually wore two gloves. So we'll see. His hands would be the smallest hands of any successful quarterback, and they're comparable to Mike Vick, who, let's face it, wasn't picked for his hands.
I think Pickett has the world record or the record of the smallest hands.
Yeah, he was really? Like an eighth of an inch smaller than Mike Vick.
The one of the funny things Chris Long talks about every once in a while is he got caught at the combine stuffing tissues in the tips of his gloves when he was doing his high jump. He was doing it, and I had never heard that. And he talks about it on his podcast every once in a while. Something comes up, but he got busted at the combine when he was going to do his jump, and they had him remove his gloves or whatever, and he got caught that he had like balled up tissue in there to just
that's hilarious.
Just that little bit extra makes a difference, I guess.
You guys know I'm not very tall, but. I used to do that same trick to get on the go-karts when I was at Cedar Point when I was a lad, because you had to be this tall to ride the ride. And I was straight to the bathroom, put as much paper towels in my shoes as I could to give me every extra. I would put like a half of a stack of paper towels in my shoes to give me the extra height so I could get on the go-karts. So, hey, every little bit counts, I guess. You know, those guys are getting measured. The difference between these guys' 40s, which it kills me. And some of these jumps are, you know, a less than a tenth of a second and, you know, a quarter inch on some of these different measures. So if you can stand out by getting that extra tiny notch that makes you look more athletic than you are, okay, sure. So moving forward, we'll get off the combine stuff. We'll hit some bigger things next week on after free agency has gotten going and we have a much better idea of what these team needs really will end up being. We'll hit some of that, but I mean, I think those were a pretty good wrap up of kind of what we saw at the combine. And those are going to be the big stories for the Browns is always quarterbacks, just because quarterback's a big story, and then defensive guys and receivers. So we'll see. One thing we won't be talking as much about right now is tight end. Because the Browns have decided to go ahead and franchise tag David Njoku, something that the listeners heard could happen about a week or two ago, because I know that is a really good way to buy yourself some time when you're trying to keep a guy long-term. Do you guys think that was the move, or do you think they actually just want another year to find out what they got in Njoku?
Wouldn't surprise me if we got a deal done. I think it's the move based on the play of our other tight ends, which mm-hmm. will both be on the roster. So we're running back the group of three tight ends, which I'm good with. I think it fits the system. But I actually wouldn't be surprised if we get the deal done. I think it's probably in the team's best interest to get the deal done, because you're probably looking at a bit of a discount on the season. I'm not sure exactly why, but I'm like pretty optimistic on what he could do this year. I think I was last year, and it maybe wasn't quite to what I thought, but I think if he does have that really big step up, which is very much possible from the team's perspective, it would be a miss not to get something done earlier.
Yeah, and I think they have all sorts of time now that he is going to be off the market to get that done. And it sounds like a big change of pace with him, which is encouraging for me, much like we talked about with the Cavs. You know, 3 years ago, he was, get me out of this place. And he actually had even bigger stats in one of those seasons, and he was just ready to go. I think he was in Freddie Kitchen's doghouse. We heard that over and over. I think he was really inconsistent with his time on the field, and he's had a big change of heart, it sounds like. And I know players say a lot of things, but one thing you don't see a lot of is, get me out of this city. And then a year or two later, yeah, I'd like to resign and stay here. And all I can think of is, you know, he likes the direction of the organization and the role in the offense better, because otherwise that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense for him to change his tune. You know, he easily could just get himself out in the open market. So it's encouraging to me to think that there may be something going on in Cleveland that makes a player want to stay here, especially given all the Odell drama and the don't come to Cleveland garbage that we just had to get through, to know that there are some guys out there. You know, John Johnson came to Cleveland on purpose. He wanted to come here. David Njoku went from, you know, trade me, I demand a trade, to, no, I want to sign here long term. Keep me around. So
I'm curious how much of that is coaching. I know we've touched on some negative aspects of that, but like, for a guy to go from like, I'm going to be the best, get me the ball, to like markedly improved in his blocking and like willingness to block. I mean, a lot of those guys just like aren't even interested. And very much like changing his game to a role that's not going to get him paid as much, right? Like, if you're out there blocking, you're not getting as much as the guy who's going to be like the team's number two receiver. So I'm like you said, there's got to be something that he likes. So which is very encouraging.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally agree. Totally agree. And it's got to be something, you know. Maybe he's really close friends with Austin Hooper. Sadly, half the Browns fans are sure Austin Hooper is no longer on the team. I am not yet convinced. Where are you guys?
I don't think it's an option.
I don't either. I think he's just staying. Like I know he can be cut in the summer, and we only have to eat about $4 million of the 15, or $4 million of the 13 million. But he can't be cut right now. And if you wait till summer to cut him, you've missed out on the free agents anyway. So I think it's better just to roll with the depth, even if though he's really irritating player. I think it's mostly because of how much he gets paid, more so than anything. I mean, he had more yards than David Njoku last year. He had about the same amount of receptions. I think he just or he had more receptions too. I think he just – it's irritating to everyone how much he's getting paid for.
But I mean, I think there were some drops. Production. He had some drops that were just.
Yeah. I don't think there was as many as we remember, but I think you're right. I think he had some that were just unacceptable drops. Like they were right in his hands, or they were for a first down and they lost us a game. And so I do get that. That's really frustrating, but I still think.
It always falls back on Baker too. So.
Yeah, right. I know. Talk about it, because the amount of trouble we had with the receivers and tight ends this year, and the amount of publicity Baker had to take for it, was that's got to be pretty discouraging. And I mean, not that he was good this year, but it was very much worst case scenario when you're having a bad year and you're trying to win a game and a receiver drops a 3rd-and-4 pass for 6 yards. And now you're going off the field. So. But I still think Austin Hooper's sticking around for the sake of, whoops, they signed him. It's very hard to get out of. He's not going to have a giant trade market with the tight ends available, even though a handful of them got tagged. And I really think that changes the market, because with Njoku being tagged, with Dalton Schultz getting tagged today, with Key getting tagged, all of a sudden the market picks up, but that still leaves a handful of guys there, and it's a pretty good draft class. So I'm not sure getting much back for him if you try to trade, but I would be open to it if it's available. And if you really believe Njoku can do this on his own and is going to stay healthy.
So the one thing with that, though, I agree with the Njoku, but, and we talked about this before last season, at the beginning of the season, the offense we run is a 12 personnel.
Yeah.
We're not running one tight end out there. So if you're good with Njoku and some miracle, someone really wants Hooper, which there's some caveats that you just very well articulated there. You got to believe in Harrison Bryant then, right? Like there's because
yeah, really, and it's early.
For like him. You really have to, and Hooper's blocking. Like I can't see a situation.
That's what I was gonna
do next. So Njoku, his blocking has so much improved. Like it's really like in a very nerdy way, enjoyable to watch a guy like just pick up blocking and get better at it. Like it's one of those things not a lot of people enjoy watching or care to notice, but to me, it's just really fun. And that's great. But Bryant can't do that. Like he's not even close. Maybe he'll get there. So,
yeah, and I think that's something that takes a long time. I mean, this is Njoku's fifth year, and he finally figured
so
it out
young.
This year.
He's so young.
And I think the big thing
still.
Is, you're right, Hooper can block. And if you've got a
he's
team.
He's great at
you,
it. And he can still catch the ball.
Run,
like,
yeah, if you have a team you're going to run as much as the Browns are going to need to try to run, you probably, even if you're overpaying him, you probably need a tight end that can consistently get out there and block. So, otherwise, you're trying to draft a guy in the draft, and we know it takes those guys a while. I mean, Bryant is having a great young career for where he was picked, but he's going into year three, and he's not having any impact at all yet. He just shows potential. So if you draft a guy in the draft, you're probably thinking you're getting the same, somebody who's going to be really good in 3 or 4 years.
All tight ends, they're all a project. Almost, they play two positions. They play wide receiver and offensive line. So unless you're only going to have him play one of those, like, I mean, Gesicki's a wide receiver. He's not a lineman. He does not block. He lines up in the slot. Like, it's going to be the whole Jimmy Graham franchise tag thing again, maybe. Mm-hmm. But, like, there's a learning curve. So,
well, with those three tight ends, I really like where we are at the position. And I honestly, given the class, wouldn't be surprised if they grab one more developmental guy. So drop Hooper next year. They've got to replace.
Okay. Him. Okay. I like that. You know? That's, I haven't heard that. I like that.
Yeah. I think you grab a guy in the fourth, fifth round, you have him sit behind three pretty established guys. And then next year, when you let Hooper walk after maybe the cap numbers are better or, you know, who knows, maybe he has a really good year, you've got somebody to step in and not worry about that position so much. So I'm pretty happy with the tight end room. What I am really not as excited about is the wide receiver room.
What wide receiver room is that?
It starts with, is Jarvis Landry, in your guys' opinion, still on this team? Because the media would make it sound like, at the moment, no.
Yeah. I think he's going to stay. I mean, I don't know. What else?
Do you? Okay. I mean, that is not the general consensus. Is most people have written him off as Jarvis Landry is no longer on this team. And I'm with you. I actually think, you know, until they decide to cut him,
right,
he is on this team. I'm sure they're trying to get him to take a smaller contract, and I'm sure he doesn't want to.
And I think he's going to have a smaller role stepping forward, too. I don't think he's going to have that high-volume role he had for a while.
Okay. Yeah. So you think – and so do you think they're keeping him as is, or do you think they're going to try to keep trying to convince him to take a pay cut?
I think they're trying to get him to take a pay cut, obviously, and that's probably what's sparking tension.
Yeah, is that what you saw those tweets as, tension? Because I kind of thought so too.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously we don't know what's going on. You know, we can only speculate. So, I mean, I guess that's just what I assumed was going on. As far as the wide receiver room goes, though, outside of Jarvis, because I really don't have that many takes on him. I'm just hoping he'll be here, and that's about the end of that.
Yeah, but I mean, the take I really wanted was, like I said, most people. You know, I'm on Twitter all the time since we started this Twitter. For the podcast last month, everyone is literally posting Browns wide receiver room is Anthony Schwartz, Donovan Peoples-Jones. And in my head, I'm with you. until further notice.
Yeah, until further
this
notice.
This room is Jarvis Landry and Donovan Peoples-Jones, and at least maybe for the next year. Because if they don't nab somebody in free agency, do you think they're still cutting Jarvis? I don't see how you can and expect Baker not to get, you know, demolished next
year. If there's one thing that Jarvis has shown us, is he's nothing but a professional. So it's not like he's not going to come in here and give us his 100%.
Yeah.
If he's here, even on if he's here on bad terms, he's still going to put out 100% because that's who he is. That's his character.
Yeah, and there's two reasons for that. One, he's just a worker. I mean, he's a football player, and the fans are going to love him, and they'll continue to love him. The other thing is that makes this a contract year, and he had a really rough year filled with injuries and a bad team, and I'm sure he's going to want to go out there and say, you know what, I'm here. He's going to Aaron Rodgers. He's going to go out and say, you know what, I thought I was gone. Not even sure I want to be here. I'm going to show everybody what's up this year, and there will be no more talk about the fact that my career is over. If I'm gone, I'm moving on to somewhere else. Like, you know, he's got a lot of reasons to play really well if he's here. The only reason I think he could be gone is if the Browns sign someone else for a equivalent deal, and then they move on for him, basically replacing him. And until that happens, I'm counting him, because then if he's gone, you don't have to count him because you've got somebody else in his place.
Well, as I'm watching all these receivers get franchise tagged, the big money guys are dwindling away. So his competition is not there. I still see some that I would love to see Brown sign when free agency opens. But
So let's go over some of those. First of all, the franchise tag guys, correct me if I'm wrong, Godwin was kind of the first franchise guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then probably to avoid the franchise tag, both Davante Adams, who I never expected to leave Green Bay anyway, is going to be signing a deal. And Mike Williams is agreeing to a 3-year deal. Did I miss anybody?
Those are the big three that I know or I heard of as well.
And you're right, that dwindles.
I thought that Adams is getting the tag. Did I miss an update?
He's
either getting the tag or signing a deal. I mean, he's staying.
Oh, no. Yeah, he's definitely staying, but I think that's
I heard tag. I heard tag, yeah.
I did too. I'm thinking it could be a Njoku situation, though, because Aaron just signed a pretty long deal, and I'm wondering if the tag is going to lead to another 3-year deal or something like that. We'll see. But yeah, so those guys
don't make it work from a cap perspective. Like, they could handshake it where, like, look, play in the tag. We can adjust the cap, and we got you. Not that you're actually allowed to do that, but.
Oh, Whiskey is upset with me. I have closed off the door to her bathroom.
Wow. Oh, I hear that attitude.
You're going to hear a little attitude in the background for me not letting her in.
Oh, man, she is upset.
I am sorry, Whiskey. Katie just texted me and is like, I think Whiskey really has to go to the bathroom. You better open the door. I'm sorry, Kitty. I'm sorry. So,
So who's left in your free agent pool that you're interested in?
I think Chark has to move to my number one, and it's mostly based on age.
Really? Okay.
Okay.
Not my number one, but one of my most favorite prospects.
He's of the group. I mean, at 25 years old, I see a more long-term commitment, more effort. I always feel like the older guys, the effort starts to dwindle away. And I don't mean old, but like 29, 30. Okay, so Allen Robinson, obviously. Who's the cowboy that I'm thinking of right now?
Cooper.
Okay,
he's still technically on the team. They're expecting to get cut. So that's a whole interesting thing there, because I don't know is that legit they're going to cut him, or is that like, hey, we're going to float this and see if we can get something.
Yeah, and somebody was telling me the other day, why would you trade for a guy that's going to get cut? And the reason is you don't want him on the market where you have to compete.
Absolutely.
If you guys are going to cut him, we'll give you a fourth or a third, give him to us, and that's what you're hoping to get. But then you inherit his ginormous $20 million a year contract, so you got to be ready for that. He's probably worth it, but that's a big, big payday.
So then another one I really like is Will Fuller.
Oh, me too.
Same.
So we'll see.
I'm a sucker. I'm ready to get hurt again. Let's do it.
So the thing I like with both your guys, and I'll tell you this, I love Allen Robinson. And for the same reason I like Fuller, because they're coming off a bad year and an injured year, but I know what they look like when they're not that. So I'm hoping you can get them at a deal, one for a longer contract, one for a shorter contract, but potentially both shorter as a sort of prove it deal. So that's all I get out of your whiskey. So that's a really big chance to maybe catch a deal on a guy who's worth a lot more for me.
Mm-hmm.
And two totally different kinds of guys and different ages, but both guys who maybe you get them on the downswing knowing that that's not really them last year.
So Will Fuller at 27.8 age.
That's not bad.
No, that's not bad. The other young name in here I'm looking at right now, Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yeah. So I got so much flack for even suggesting him, but he's another guy that...
Thank you for doing my bidding on that one.
Yeah, given his role, basically...
He's younger than I thought. He's an early 25.
25, yeah.
He started in the league. He was 20. He could not drink when he played in the NFL, or at least when he was drafted. Mm-hmm. He was such a baby. And I remember getting killed in our dynasty league for taking him as early as I did. I was wrong. But the move was like, he's younger. He's 2 years younger than everyone else who was coming out.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think he got drowned out for two reasons, and this doesn't say much for him, but Deontay Johnson is just a better version of him. So sorry to him that somebody got drafted that's just better than you at your own position. And the Steelers not only just brought in two really good receivers that are even younger than him, but Ben also kind of has stunk for 2 years, which just plummeted him. He was very stupid to not sign with the Chiefs last year and go back to Pittsburgh, I think.
That's such an interesting thing because he's still being linked to the Chiefs. And it just didn't make sense. Like, aside from the guys just like wanting to play and be there, which sucks for us, frankly. That the players love it there so much, but it just didn't make any sense for him, like career wise, chance for winning, his stats. Like he needed a big stat year.
Yeah.
To be back out in the market. Somewhere. Like you knew the Steelers weren't going to sign you after this year, and they're not. Nope. Like there's been no talks, no expectation that's going to happen. Your chance to actually get paid. He essentially delayed by a year because he probably goes somewhere on a short-term deal.
Why do Steelers guys always make that mistake of just not getting paid, going and getting paid?
So I think they do, and then they end up as like a disappointment to some other team. I mean, you got the...
I'm just thinking of Le'Veon Bell being like, I'm not going to go sign some girlfriend.
That was dumb.
I'm not going to take the money that's presented to me, the best shot. I'm just going to make
a bet. We remember Young Money Crew. and most of them left to almost no success or at least mediocre. But I think Juju fits a role on the team. And if we get rid of Landry. So that's the caveat.
We're going to get roasted for this take, by the way.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Doesn't he have a pretty good run blocker too?
He's a good all-around player.
He's better on the, he's not a number one on the outside. Okay, great. We've all figured that out. Then put him in a position to succeed. And don't put him as your number one on the outside, but he'll block,
which means he murdered perfect.
That's how long he's been in the league. Like he murdered perfect after the hit on Brown. You want to know who?
Yeah, but then he did a TikTok dance on their logo and got murdered himself.
You know who else he got drafted with? Cooper Kupp.
Okay. One of them is like going on 30.
One of them is much closer to our age than the other.
Yeah. Ooh.
Like, but that's how, like, that's a crazy thing to think about when you're like, oh yeah, there's Cooper Kupp, which had an amazing out of this world year.
Best ever.
But that's how much he is 5 years younger. Depending on the time, at least 4 years younger.
Yeah, he's about four. Yeah, he's probably about 4 years younger, which is pretty crazy because in wide receiver years, you only get about a 10-year career. So 4 years younger is a pretty big span. You only get a career until about 31. So if you're good.
He has a role if Jarvis is not on the team. I'm not saying I want that, but if we move on from Jarvis, I don't see a lot of that specific position of wide receiver available, right?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Dale.
Not Robinson, right? Like, we're not grabbing Robinson for that route running.
I mean, you're talking about a guy who has encroached 1,000 yards or passed it 3 times in 5 years, and his only real down year was this past one.
Duck Rudolph?
But he was also playing for Chicago, and yeah.
And he was, I don't know. But that's what I mean. I don't remember a receiver class where Juju, a bunch of great years, terrible year this past year. Robinson, a bunch of great years, terrible this year. Fuller, a bunch of good years, just awful this year.
Hurt.
Good year to grab. Yeah. For one reason or another, but that lowers your price. I don't know a year where there's this many guys with a deflated price tag because you just can't pay them based on last year's stats. I'm used to the opposite. It was a contract year. This guy blows up and has the best year of his career. Then you pay him and then they're nowhere to be found. This year seems there's a lot of guys that are the opposite.
Maybe we have some bargains available.
Yeah,
to
that's
us.
What I'm saying. It may be a blessing in disguise that some of these guys were so bad. The only other guy we haven't talked about who is on my list is Christian Kirk. And I would say a very similar kind of talent to Juju with maybe a little less upside, but a lot more of a standard, solid, low conflict human being. So that's another person that I would not be mad about.
It's not going to be good for the team social media, though. So I'm not.
No, we will be a lot higher with Juju in the media market.
Also, Christian Kirk is early, 25 years old, which
very young. Yeah, very young. Like hitting his prime. Yeah, him and Juju are hitting that prime age. Chark somewhere in that region too. The older guys like Robinson and even Cooper, if you were to come out, are more of let's see if we can get out of this guy for the next year or two and just see if he can boost us. The other guys are long-term deals, I think.
I think out of all of those guys, though, the only one that, me personally, who thinks has a shot to like step up or exceed what he's done is Juju.
Oh, I thought Chark too, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I really like Chark.
That's fair.
Yeah, I only say Juju because Chark. He had like a 1,400.
I don't with Kirk.
I don't either.
Kirk, I think he is who he is.
Yeah.
Robinson is at that age where, like, don't get me wrong, I am all in on Allen Robinson. Yeah. And
he's getting better.
I will ignore last year in a heartbeat.
Does anybody think the biggest thing with Robinson is that he's quarterback proof for the most part? Is that like not the biggest selling point? In a down year last year because he was injured a bit and that team was a disaster. But
and their offense, they didn't even have a real offense. They were all over the place. Like,
if you can get your hands on him, he's somebody I believe can obviously make Baker seem quite a bit better or get his stride back, because that's a guy who just seems to be good. He's not the fastest receiver. He's just a great route runner. But one
comes down with the ball. He's a great possession. Yeah. Like not possession, but like see ball, get ball. Like he doesn't need a ton of separation.
Nope. He's gonna beat the cornerback. He can get off press coverage. He's good. I just think there's a lot of options that look like good fits for Baker Mayfield. The one court people forget so much. Baker Mayfield had a terrible year, but I think people got this impression like Jarvis is bad with Baker Mayfield. Not true. Jarvis had his best year with the Browns and has had great years with the Browns. Brashad Perryman was basically about to get cut from his NFL career, got on the team with Baker Mayfield, boom, played really well, better than he ever had in the past, hasn't played that well since. There is this...
Forgot about him.
Yeah, and everybody did, because after he left the Browns, he does not exist anymore. So I think people are forgetting that besides, like, if Odell Beckham Jr. never existed on this team, there aren't really any receivers who have suffered from Baker Mayfield. Somebody even told me in a little bit of a Twitter argument, Austin Hooper is so much worse with Baker Mayfield. Austin Hooper has almost the same yards per catch as he did with the Falcons, and he has twice as many touchdowns per receptions with the Browns. The difference is he's getting 40 targets a year here because Njoku's on the other side. And in Atlanta, he got 80 receptions a year. So, of course, his yards were double, but his touchdowns weren't double and his receiving yards per catch weren't double. He doesn't get the attempts here, and he has more drops here than he had in Atlanta. So that's not a Baker issue. That's a Hooper issue, and it's an offense issue. But the reality is there's besides Odell, there aren't any other examples of guys who were just bad here but good somewhere else. It just hasn't happened yet. And we've seen it with other quarterbacks with the Browns. Guys good somewhere else, bad here, good somewhere else. That's just not the case right now. So that's just kind of like a myth that needs to be busted. I think any other receivers you guys want to cover, the only person we didn't hit was Michael Gallup. And it was kind of because, Dale, you said with them floating Amari Cooper, probably you're thinking Gallup gets re-signed, huh?
Yeah, that's funny enough, just through some Dynasty fantasy stuff over the last actually like 2 years, there's been some back and forth on value of like, well, Cooper, Gallup, and when they grabbed Lamb, I don't know why, but my thought was just kind of like, they're just going to have to move on from Cooper with the price tag. You have Gallup.
And who's that other kid, Wilson?
Cedric Wilson.
Did they have pass catchers over there?
No, they do. I mean, Schultz and who they we talked about, they tagged. And the other tight end that I'm unfortunately blanking on his name right now, but you have CeeDee Lamb. You have Gallup. I really like Gallup. To me, it was going to be between one of those two. And I thought from the price tag perspective, as much as they're paying Ezekiel Elliott, which I don't agree with,
they're killing him.
They can't move on from it. They're going to have to pick and choose after they kind of made their bed there. So
yeah,
Cooper was kind of just, well, I don't think they really have much of a choice. They need to make the cap work. And I think that bodes well for Gallup. If you got him in a dynasty league, or if you're looking at next year, his stock's going to be down. He might be sneaky, but yeah, it's not surprising that they're doing that. That's actually what I expected like two off seasons ago, was like in the cards.
Yeah. And again, the toughest thing with the Cowboys receivers are the fact that receptions and yardage wise, there's just so many of them that none of them, you know, are going to jump off the page as high as they probably could be on another team, but also they kept each other open. My only honorable mention, because I'm not interested in like Scandling, I could take T.Y. Hilton on a 1 year deal, you know, if we needed him. The only other guy that I'm kind of interested in that I see a little bit of a fit with is Russell Gage, because I think he's going to be cheap and he's on my fantasy team and he's a receiver who's young enough to get a couple good years out of him. So that's kind of my sleeper. I just pay attention to him because he's on the dynasty team. That's all.
I actually didn't know that he was available. Chip, do you have anyone? Was there anyone else kind of off of Chad's list that you had been looking at or thinking about?
No, not really. I mean, I think that's pretty much all of them. You got Byron Pringle. No, I'm just kidding.
The dynasty nerds. I mean, we're all in on, yeah,
a depth.
Anyone who plays in that offense. So Chip, you've been. I have a question for you. So you've been pretty big on free agent wide receivers. Have you been concerned that there's been like no noise? I was like realizing that a little later today that like. Out of all the kind of gossip around, even like the Wilson stuff, Chad, you and I take an L on that one pretty big, that he wasn't going anywhere. But the news, the gossip has been out there that it was possible. Like, man, I have not heard anyone tied to the Browns. Like, is there anything that you've seen?
No. I mean, it's been really quiet pretty much around the league, I think, but I know Barry's going to make some moves here. I definitely expect it. I just don't know where and when it's coming. I really, really have high hopes for Chark. I don't, and I don't know why. I just have a gut feeling. But okay. No, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
know.
It's just Barry's style to go young, too. Like, I don't see him go old very often. He went old a few times last year, only when he was filling some gaps. Other than that, all his early moves were young players.
Yeah, keep in mind, when he goes old, you're looking at a one-year deal for a guy
who
had kind of a downish year with some potential to bounce back.
There's just not a lot.
So, Will Fuller. Is that what I – that's what
Yeah, Will Fuller's 27. Okay. He's –
He's coming off off so many injuries.
But I think you're paying a lot for Will Fuller where DJ Chark are getting in a deal.
Maybe. Yeah.
No. Oh, really? No, I don't think you're paying anything for Will Fuller. Will Fuller's I think he's going to be cheap.
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to what Barry can pull off. I think, like I said, a lot of these guys will be cheaper than their talent level, which is rare in just my estimation, because they're all having rough years. But we know that that's not reality.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, we'll see things. I think, you know, free agency starts, for everybody that doesn't know, the tampering period starts on the 14th, and that's where we'll hear the major free agent deals. And then everything else is coming from the 16th to the 18th when the real free agency opens. And throughout the rest of that week, that's when the spot signings and fillers will be done. So it's coming up in just a week from now, and it's going to be crazy. And the most interesting spot to watch for me in or outside of Brown's world is where those handful of leftover receivers go. Otherwise, the big needs for the Browns are defensive line and linebacker. So I put a list of some guys I really like. I didn't cover linebacker yet. I didn't get to it yet. But on the defensive line, Futakasi, BJ Hill, DJ Jones, Settle, Phillips, Hurst, Linval Joseph and Joseph Day were names that popped out to me. I'm going to post some of that on our Twitter later so people can take a look at them and look those guys up and get an idea of who they are, because I will be absolutely shocked if at least one of those guys aren't in Brown and Orange next week. And then I'll put a list of other guys that we should be thinking about. And that includes guys like Ogunjobi, who everybody's familiar with, you know, Vernon Butler, Jerron Reed, Malik Collins, some other guys that may fit that role of what you just talked about, Chip, signing an older guy for a one-year deal just to fill the roster with some experience.
Mm-hmm.
And we won't get into them right now, but those are names to keep an eye out. And I don't feel nearly the grasp on this year as I did last year, but last year I put out my position guys to watch, and I got somebody from, I think, every single position. I did linebacker, safety, cornerback, defensive line, and I forget what else, but I hit everywhere, and I think a lot of people just weren't thinking of some of those guys. So I'm going to put them out there so people might be a little bit more ready for that.
So I haven't followed his career that much, but I know Dante Fowler was a first round. God, wasn't he like a first overall pick at one point?
I don't think he was a first overall pick, but I think he was a first rounder.
He was a top, like, God, I want to say like a top five, but
I'll grab that for you. Go ahead. Keep going.
I see he's on the free agency list and he's in his early 27 years of age. And I'm just wondering why I'm not hearing a lot about Dante Fowler. I think I would like to take a shot on him.
I would say for sure at edge position, he's got to be really far up there. To Dale's point a few minutes ago about the receivers, I just feel like I haven't been hearing a lot about anything in free agency. And with the receivers, and until today when some guys started getting signed, I really just haven't heard much to the Browns, but I just haven't heard much in general. It's almost like football is just covering, very excited to get back to the combine this year after missing it last year and has skipped what I'm used to. I usually see lists of, oh, my top favorite free agent destinations for each player, free agent top 10, you know, things to look for the Browns, and it's not there. But I agree, Dante Fowler, you know, had a really down year last year, but he's been a better player and might be another great steal.
He could be. So Chip, he was the third overall pick by the Jags in 2015. That's what happened.
Yeah, I knew he was up
but
there.
And I remember him because I was high on him that year because I remember being excited for a good buddy of mine who's a Jags fan. And then I remembered he missed that whole season, and he's had a bunch of injuries. He got drafted in 2015. He's only played three full seasons. Last 2 years were with Atlanta. He got 14 and 14. So honestly, I would actually count that. So we'll give him five. But he's had some off the field things too. But injuries have kind of got him here and there. He got a good year. He got a good contract out of the Falcons. So
it sounds like he just needs a good Andrew Berry pep talk and second chance there.
What I would say he really needs is to be on the other side of Miles.
Playing with Miles.
Yeah, he needs to be on the other side. I agree.
You know where I see him fitting in as an older version, though, of Tack McKinley, that guy who has been down, had some on and off the field and injury issues, wants to revive his career. So maybe he wants to line up opposite of Miles. I would not trust him as, unless you have Clowney or another higher level end, and there are a lot of them available this year, more than people are giving credit to, I'm not signing him because I don't trust him, but he is a great flyer.
So his full 16 game season with the Rams, so he got to play with the best defensive player in history. He had 11 and a half sacks.
Yeah, pretty good. Nothing like that last year, but
he played all the games. He only started 14, so he wasn't an every down guy or anything. And batted down six balls. That was a couple years ago and he had a great year, but he was playing on a good defensive team. The last two seasons he played with Atlanta. That is not what Atlanta has been.
Yeah, that is not a good defensive team. So the last thing I want to cover on is the ends, because I just want people to out there to kind of realize, because I'm hearing a lot of, and we talked about this a bit, Chip, everybody has assumed that Clowney is on this team and I'm just not there yet. I know he loves money. He had such a good last year. He's going to be on the market. He's not signed yet, which means he's going to be taking suitors and we could be outbid. And in case that happens, although I'd love to have him back because we know it works and he had his best year in a long time. So it very clearly made the point, if he's healthy, he works here. But other guys on the market, I'm not counting Von Miller. I don't think we have a shot there. I think he's going to be between two spots. But other guys on Chandler Jones, older, still pretty good player.
Yeah.
Randy Gregory, stud, a little bit older. Emmanuel Ogba having his two best seasons in a row in Miami has been really helpful. And even before he left Cleveland, he had a decent little bit of a run there. And then Melvin Ingram is on the market. Hassan Reddick, Harold Landry the third.
No. Landry got signed today.
Did he get signed?
Yep.
Okay, so cross him off then.
Oh, he got paid today.
Some of these guys still might. Franchise tags are out.
Five-year deal with the Titans.
Franchise tags are out, and a lot of guys signed, we talked about earlier, so they don't get franchised.
Right.
So he's gone, but you're still looking at Jerry Hughes. You're getting in the pretty good.
So we're just running it back.
Yeah. It's just very much like Jason Pierre-Paul's out there. I forget, Arden Key is a guy I really like. Who else? We just said Dante Fowler. So there's other guys out there. It's not Jordan like Davis. A desperate, if Clowney leaves, we are screwed. There are plenty of guys, old and young, that we can hit. So just keep that in mind, everybody, because the Browns currently have on our defensive front at edge rusher Myles Garrett and I believe Weaver is under contract. I don't think anyone else is any more than a restricted free agent or unrestricted free agent. And our defensive line right now, I think Sheldon Day might be restricted. I'm not positive, but that leaves us with Jordan Elliott and Tommy Togiai. There is nothing on this team right now on the defensive front other than Myles Garrett. And so for everybody focusing on receivers, yes, that's way more fun, and yes, that's going to happen. If the Browns don't grab at least two defensive linemen and at least two edge rushers in free agency so that they're not screwed in the draft having to reach for guys, I will be shocked. It just seems like Andrew Berry is too good of a team builder to miss that. Similar to what he did last year with the defensive backfield, I mean the defensive backs and the linebackers. It was like, okay, these two areas are really thin. Just grab whoever I can to fill, and then you can pick Koromoa and Newsom anyway, because a lot of guys you picked were on 1-year deals.
It's very much the draft for value, free agency trade, whatever you want to call it, for need. Like he grabbed everyone.
He said before, I don't like to grab depth in free agency, but I like to grab players. And it's like, okay, he wants guys that can start, and it's not going to count them out from just replacing them next year. That's why he does so many short-term deals with guys who aren't 25. So that's pretty much what I wanted to cover. The linebacker room is a question mark.
Chad, you know who he didn't hit? Super Bowl winning Danny Shelton.
He's on my list, but he's under the other for I'll post him on Twitter. He's under other for defensive lineman. I sort of only named guys I was excited about. I mean Sheldon Richardson and Dominican Sewer out there. There's a lot of guys I kind of skipping.
I know. I'm just teasing.
I can see that. But you are right. Danny Shelton, who we're all familiar with. We may have honestly let go a little.
Have the Browns given away? Just let go
20 Super Bowl.
The best crop of defensive linemen.
Yes,
ever.
That's what
just
happens
like
when you
we just let them
every two
all
years.
Go. We just let them go.
When you change GMs every 2 years, they want their own guys. They don't re-sign any of the old guys that have been developing, and everybody else wins. We put together entire Kansas City Chiefs offensive line once.
It's one of my favorite things watching just random red zone games and you see some like big sack and you're like, oh yeah. Oh, good for him. Oh, I'm so happy. That's great.
Yeah. We got
sucks
right
for
your
us,
guy.
But man, it's so good
to
see
guy to
he did not succeed in 6 years later.
Yeah.
He's doing great for everyone else.
again, that's why I got in so many arguments with people about firing coaches and GMs so soon, because that's what I keep seeing is our players going to play somewhere else. But
it seems like the defensive line is where they shine.
Yeah, linemen are at the top of the crop. That's for sure. Yeah. Offensive too. I think we have a lot of offensive linemen we let walk.
No skill positions or quarterbacks or anything of the like. But
yeah, that's much
in the trenches. We got it taken care of.
Yep. All right. Well, that covers kind of the free agency wrap up and the team needs.